Welcome to the jungle. A very good Tuesday to you. My name is Jim Rome. And this program is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. What's going on? Welcome to the program. It is good to be here. Let me set it up for you. We are broadcasting live from Southern California, and we do have our TV simulcast back. CBS Sports Network does have the radio program on television. And something curious that I noticed yesterday, because of the lockdown and because so many of you are at home, a number of you who have heard the show before have never actually seen the show before. Like, the simulcast is a whole new element to you, for you. Now, understand the show as you're seeing it right now on CBS Sports Network, and it is awesome to be back on the air there. It's not exactly the same version that we normally have because of certain challenges, but we are back on the air, and that's what matters most. So if you have not seen the TV show, the simulcast, you want to look for it right now. It's CBS Sports Network. We are live, we are simulcasting, and I've got a lot of show for you. If you know what you want to talk about, you can hit me up right now, 1-800-636-8686. It is toll-free. Call the program. I'm going to front-load with two interviews, but you cannot get in early enough. Hit that number. If you want to follow me on Twitter, that works too. Follow me at Jim Rome, and you can email me at Rome, R-O-M-E, at haveatake.com. The interview is set up like this. Coming up next segment, an ESPN senior writer, Seth Wickersham, excellent, excellent journo, and he wrote an amazing piece for ESPN about Tom Brady and the final days there and what happened and why there was that divorce. Seth Wickersham joining me in about 15 minutes. Top of hour number two, we talked to Pete Thamel, Yahoo National College football and basketball reporter. And then at the top of hour number three, Shaq Barrett, the 2019 NFL sack leader and a member of the Tampa Bay Bucks. It is Tuesday. Tuesday means it is the What's Your Beef Day. That segment's coming up, probably in hour number two. If you want to beef about something and you can do it responsibly, go ahead and do it. I'll take that beef via the phones, via Twitter, via email. You know where to find me. What's your beef? I'm here live. Part of the XR4TI is on the other side. We are operating kind of bare-boned to be safe and to be responsible. All right, that's how it's setting up. Let me start right here. There were hints, which started yesterday in an interview that a longtime IOC member did with USA Today. That member in question told that paper, quote, on the basis of the information the IOC has, postponement has been decided. The parameters going forward have not been determined, but the games are not going to start on July 24th. That much I know, end quote. Now, for some reason, whenever this particular, extremely well-respected IOC member speaks, people seem to get lost in the sauce. They forget about what he is saying, and they focus only on this guy's name. Yes, I will grant you this. It is a pretty interesting name. I know. I'm aware. I've heard that name before. He is one of the most respected figures in international athletics. He was an Olympic swimmer, a five-time Canadian national champion, a four-time medalist at the Commonwealth Games. He helped found the World Anti-Doping Agency. Time magazine has hailed him as one of the 100 most influential people in the entire world. So when this particular guy speaks, you should listen. And yet, despite that resume, all anybody wants to do is laugh when this guy speaks because of his name. You know who I'm talking about by now, right? This guy's name is Richard William Duncan Pound. And yes, he goes by Dick Pound. Yeah, I got it. That's hilarious. That's really funny. You can get over it right about now, second graders. Yes, I know his birth name is Richard. And that he could easily go by Richard, or Rick, or Rich, or Ricky, or Richie. But he doesn't. And? What's your point? This isn't news. The guy is in the news at least every 2 years when there is an Olympics. And usually more than that. And yet every single time, people react like it's the first time they've ever heard of this guy. Every single time, people are busting a gut laughing about his name. If he speaks to the media, he'll trend on Twitter, and every tweet will be somebody cracking up over his name. I mean, grow up already. Get over it. And yes, I'm sure he's aware you're all laughing. Just as I'm sure he doesn't give a damn. This guy doesn't care. That's why he's a badass. But this is not about some guy's name. This is about the 2020 Olympics in Tokyo and the fact that Mr. Pound was giving the hint yesterday. And then today it did become official. The IOC released a statement a few hours back that read in part, quote, "In the present circumstances and based on the information provided by the WHO today, the IOC president and the prime minister of Japan have concluded that the games in Tokyo must be rescheduled to a date beyond 2020, but not later than the summer of 2021 to safeguard the health of the athletes, everybody involved in the Olympic Games, and the international community," end quote. And there it is. There you have it. Finally, the 2020 Olympics are going to be held in 2021. They'll be held in 2021 and still called the 2020 Olympics. Good, right? That's the right call. That's a no-brainer. A truly and thoroughly complicated no-brainer, but a no-brainer nonetheless. See, unlike a regular professional sports league, postponing the Olympics is not as simple as just suspending things for a few months and then picking it right back up. This is not something where you start a phone tree, get the word out to everybody, and then meet up in the park for a rescheduled Olympics a few months later. Like, the Olympic Games are on a totally different scale. According to USA Today, for instance, the operating budget for these Olympics is already closing in on $13 billion, with a B, $13 billion. That is a massive endeavor. And doing anything that changes it is also a massive endeavor. Like, it's not like the Clippers or the Lakers playing at Staples, and they just need to make sure that the arena is free into July, August, and maybe later so they can play those games. In the case of the Olympics, it's not just a matter of will the arena be free in 2021. In some cases, the arenas are not supposed to exist in 2021. Like, some of the Olympic venues are effectively pop-ups, and they get taken down after the games, or they're scheduled to be converted into something else. Now you have to decide if they'll stay up for a year longer, or if you'll take them down and then put them back up in a year. This is why this is a logistical nightmare. Like, the Olympic Village was supposed to be converted into apartments after the games, and some of those units have already been sold. And that's before we get into all the other competitions around the globe, like the 2021 World Track and Field Championships in Eugene, Oregon. They'll now be thrown off or eliminated altogether because the Olympics is moving a year later. So how does that work now? That's what they're going to have to try to figure out. And that's why they've been a lot slower than regular professional leagues to make this move, because they were probably hoping that it wouldn't come to this and they waited as long as they possibly could, but it did. Like, there was no way they could go ahead with the Olympics this summer. Countless athletes in countless countries have had their training impacted by coronavirus, and they've got no idea when they'd be able to get back to regular training. Schedules for the Olympic trials have been thrown off. So, preparing for the Olympics, either as the host country or as an athlete, is never easy, and it's even more challenging in the face of a global pandemic. But even if you could sort out all the training and all the Olympic trials, and you could get everybody safely to Tokyo for those games, then you've got the matter of the games themselves. And the fact that you'd be gathering thousands of people from around the world in the same spot for a couple of weeks in the summer during a global pandemic. I mean, that would be one of the most absurd, dangerous things ever. So I will say it again. I've said it before, and I'll say it here. The moral of the story is, when Mr. Pound speaks, you listen. It will be a logistical nightmare to not hold them as scheduled, but much better than the actual nightmare of holding them as scheduled. The Olympics make the NBA, NHL, NFL, and MLB look nimble by comparison. Those massive sports leagues are like speedboats compared to the Olympics. In other words, postponing the games will be like turning around the Titanic, but going ahead with them would be like letting the Titanic steam right into the iceberg.
Iceberg, right ahead.
If you see me working. It's a logistical nightmare to postpone the games, but so much worse to try and pull them off as scheduled. 1-800-636-8686. Your thoughts on that? I want to talk more about the NFL. You know, very quietly under the radar, the Saints were able to add a really important asset. All the talk has been about Tom Brady going to Tampa Bay, and where does that leave them, and where does that leave the Patriots? Lost in all of this is a very good Patriots team that made a really good addition with Emmanuel Sanders. And even more interesting when you figure out how he got there and why he's going there. I have that story for you. Maybe you were on Twitter last night. Maybe you saw, of all things, Steve Nash trending. Maybe you fear the worst. It's not that, but he did trend, and arguably for all the wrong reasons. This is the new world. This is the new normal. I've got that for you. Mariano Rivera, I tried to get to yesterday. I'll try and reset that for you today. And the more things change, the more things never change at all. Another quality head coach that would never, ever, for even one second, consider coaching the New York Knicks. No names mentioned. Stan Van Gundy. That's coming up. I also posted something on my Twitter feed. I did a podcast with a gentleman named Ed Mylett. Now, if you know Ed Mylett, you know you want to listen to this. If you do not know Ed Mylett, I want to tell you about him. One of the most charismatic, compelling people I've ever met. And I sat down for his podcast, and it's posted right now. I want to show you that. One more thing about the shutdown. Here in California, there is a new bit of, I don't want to say legislation, but a new rule, where you can actually order booze to go. I want to get into that. And I want to say whether or not I think that's a good idea. You can now order booze to go. You know, if you go into any establishment whatsoever, the signs are clearly stating the booze needs to stay on the premises, on the property. You cannot take it with you. Now, not only can you take it out, they will bring it to you. And we'll talk about whether or not that is a good idea or not. All of that's coming up. When we come back, ESPN senior writer Seth Wickersham will be my guest. Stay tuned. I've got Pete Thamel also coming up the top of hour number two. You can save big during the Power Torque Tools DIY Day Sale, which is happening right now at O'Reilly Auto Parts, where you will find great deals on socket sets, wrenches, and more. If you're a do-it-yourselfer, you need the right tools for the job, and this is your opportunity. Right now, get a 57-piece quarter-inch drive ratchet, socket, and bit set, only $24.99, plus double O reward points, which means you'll get to your next reward even faster. So stop in and let the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts help you find the tools that you need to get the job done right the first time. But what if you're not close to home when your car breaks down? The professional parts people can still help. With O'Reilly Auto Parts shop referral program, you can take the guesswork out of finding a great shop wherever you are. Just call an O'Reilly location near you or visit O'ReillyAuto.com and click find a repair shop to find a reputable repair facility or service center for all your repairs. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better service, or better prices every day. O'Reilly Auto Parts.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
So you have all this extra time. Use it wisely. Pick up the phone. Hit us up. Maybe normally you don't have that opportunity. You got nothing but time right now. 1-800-636-8686. And I will take those telephone calls a little bit later on. Again, we are live on CBS Sports Network. So the TV show simulcast is once again a thing. And you know to find us on the radio. We are joined right now by a senior writer at ESPN and Outside the Lines. His latest piece is the story behind the split of Tom Brady, Bill Belichick, and the Patriots. It is a tremendous read. Seth Wickersham is my guest. Seth, it is good to have you back in the jungle. How are you?
Hey, Jim. It's great to be here. Longtime fan.
I know. Great to have you back, Seth. Me too. Mutual respect to you. So you've got this great piece up right now about the relationship between Tom Brady, Bill Belichick, and the Patriots. You make the point that this is not something that just happened last week. It's been a long time in the making. So if you could, Seth, go back. Go way back. November 2001, you and Brady had a meeting at the old Foxborough Stadium. What were your impressions of Brady at that time?
Yeah, well, we met and, you know, we were both about a year out of college and that was a slight bond. And the thing that struck me was just how much confidence he had in the ability to play football. He said, you know, the game has always come easy to me. And that was surprising because, you know, he's a sixth round pick. And then the second thing that struck me was just how deeply he cared about his craft in a way that I thought was different than other people. It almost felt like there was an element of self-actualization that the game brought to him. And as we were leaving, he looked at the stadium, Gillette Stadium, which was under construction, and he looked over at it and he said, you know, I hope I get to play there one day. And it's crazy to think about now that, you know, way back when he was thinking about, you know, will I even have a chance to play in that stadium? It's a crazy contrast to think about now in respect to where he is.
No question. Seth Wickersham is joining us. So, Seth, the root of the split between Brady and the Patriots, of course, does not go all the way back to 2001. Before we get into the moments where that relationship started to fray permanently, how would you describe the relationship between Brady and Belichick when it was at its very best? I mean, were they ever especially close?
Well, they were close business associates, and, you know, it was always a business relationship with them. And it's one of the things that Bill Belichick has been so successful at is separating the personal relationship from the business relationship. And he has, you know, done it ruthlessly on a level that no head coach has ever done it. And that was always going to create a tension with Tom Brady's stated goal of playing until he was in his mid-40s. He started doing that about a decade ago. I mean, it sounds crazy, maybe not quite a decade ago, but he started doing it a while ago. And at the time, I think even people in the building didn't think that he was going to play until he was in his mid-40s, that they would never have to cross that bridge. But sure enough, I mean, he got better. The Patriots were looking, you know, beyond Tom Brady in 2013, even in 2014 when they drafted Jimmy Garoppolo. But Tom got better. And there was always going to be an inherent tension between Bill Belichick's genius and knowing when to move on from a guy, never paying for past performance, and Tom Brady's longevity. You know, his dad once told me he's going to be a modern-day George Blanda. That's how he's handled his career, and there was always going to be a problem in New England.
We are talking to Seth Wickersham. All right, Seth, so there are a bunch of bumpy moments, such as Deflategate, the TB12 method issues. But if you had to point to a moment or a time when it started to fracture, when would you say that was, and what was it about?
Well, I think that there was like a lot of things over the course of 20 years. It's kind of amazing that it lasted that long. But I think that, you know, you go back to the fall of 2017. There were some issues in the building surrounding, you know, the TB12 method at his business and Alex Guerrero, his trainer. But, you know, at the heart of what Tom Brady wanted at that time was a contract extension. He wanted a commitment, and he preferred it to be with the Patriots, but if they didn't want to commit to him, I think he was okay leaving. He just wanted some clarity, and that issue never went away. It continued into August of 2018. Remember, he skipped the entire offseason program. And then August of 2019, last August, he reportedly almost left camp because he was so frustrated with the way the contract negotiations were going. And so I think that when that happened and he was able to void out of his contract this year and everybody knew it, I think that that's the opportunity that he exploited. And so, you know, when you ask, like, you know, what have been the issues, there have been some bumps in the road, but at the end of the day, it was the same thing. He wanted a commitment from whatever team he was playing for that would allow him to play until he was in his mid-40s, and the Patriots were only willing to go year to year.
Seth Wickersham is joining us. You know, so you also make the point, Seth, that Brady wanted to feel valued. He wanted to love the work that he was doing. And at the risk of getting way too deep into the psychology of all this, is Belichick unable to do that, or is Belichick simply unwilling to do that?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's unwilling to. I think that he, you know, it'll be a question that I'll try to answer at some point. But, you know, when he learned the discipline to just be emotionless in terms of how he would deal with current players on the roster and, you know, how he took that to an extreme is a fascinating story. I don't know exactly when it happened for him. But because of it, you know, Brady was always a special case. We all knew that. I mean, he'd always talk about, you know, how he's just another Patriot and Belichick would coach him like he's just another Patriot. But everybody knew that he was a little bit different, right? I mean, he'd negotiate contracts like he did in 2013 alone with Robert Kraft on a plane from Boston to L.A. But at the end of the day, Robert Kraft was the one who was going to let Bill Belichick drive the negotiations here. And Bill was only willing to go to year to year. He's never going to pay for past performance. And even though we were warned over the years, I mean, Tom Brady Sr. has been very clear that it was going to end poorly in New England. I think everybody thought that it might not, that there might be another exception here for him, and there just wasn't.
We are talking to Seth Wickersham. So, Seth, go to Bob Kraft for a minute. You brought him up. When he says that Brady came to his house last week and, quote, I thought he was coming over, as he has for the last 10 years, to quietly get things done, end quote, what do you make of that comment? I mean, do you think that he actually believed that that was going to happen, or is he just trying to put a nice spin on it?
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of both there. I thought that the thing that was interesting about it was that he had, you know, found a way through media channels to make clear that Bill was going to be the one driving this negotiation. And, you know, there's a lot of people who took that as he's putting this thing in Belichick's lap so that, you know, people blame him when Tom leaves. That's a level of detail I don't quite have yet, but I thought it was a very revealing comment. And whether it was spin or whether he, you know, was doing it as a way to kind of absolve himself of it, we'll see. I just don't know.
Seth Wickersham is joining us. He's a senior writer at ESPN and Outside the Lines. His latest piece is the story behind the split of Tom Brady, Bill Belichick, and the Patriots. He joins us for a few more moments. You know, Seth, in terms of other strange psychological moments, how do you explain the connection between Tom Brady and Antonio Brown, given all of Brown's truly troubling behavior?
Truly troubling. And I thought that was one of the most interesting things, is that, you know, when the Patriots lost Rob Gronkowski, they lost this matchup nightmare. I mean, nobody could cover that guy, even when they put two players on him. And so it left a huge hole in the offense. And the Patriots filled it with Antonio Brown, who had just been released from Oakland and, you know, had a bunch of bizarre behavior there. Brady takes him under his wing. I was startled with how close they were. I mean, you know, Antonio Brown was living at Brady's house, and it only lasts one game. And I think that was like another moment that just showed that this thing, you know, was just not going to work. I mean, I think that Bill wanted to keep Antonio Brown, even though at the end it appeared to be that he was on board with releasing him after, you know, Brown went off the rails after only being in New England for 2 weeks. But I think that, you know, that relationship to me has always been a little bit of a mystery. And I think that at the end of the day, Tom thought that, you know, look, if I keep this guy under my wing, yeah, he's troubled, but I can keep him close to me. He can produce on the field, and we'll have a pretty dynamic offense. Antonio Brown gets released, and you just saw the Patriots struggle to get open. And, you know, I know that there's a lot of spin that comes out of New England that, you know, everything that they struggle with on offense is always the surrounding cast. It's never Tom Brady. I mean, some of the coaches who looked at Tom Brady and evaluated him, you know, didn't necessarily agree with that all the time. But, you know, robbed the Patriots of a matchup nightmare, and I think that it's fair to say that a lot of their receivers struggled to get open, and the Patriots just weren't as difficult to defend this year. I mean, he told NBC at the middle of the year, I'm the most miserable 8-0 quarterback in the NFL. That was a startling and revealing comment.
It was. Seth Wickersham is joining us. I'm picking my spot, Seth, because you've been so good with your time. What is your sense of how the Patriots would evaluate Brady internally right now? What kind of conversations would they have, and what do they think about him right now in terms of playing?
Well, I don't know exactly how they feel about every throw that he could make, but clearly they value him as a year-to-year quarterback because that's what they offered him. And that, to me, says it all. I mean, Ian O'Connor, my colleague, wrote in his book Belichick that came out, I think, 2 years ago, he quoted one of the coaches saying, like, look, I think we could win games with any of 15 top quarterbacks in the NFL. I mean, we know that there wouldn't be Hall of Famers, but we think we could make it work. And the genius of the Patriots has always been finding a winning game plan no matter who's on the roster. I mean, we've seen it happen time and time and time again. Brady was always the exception to that. He was the backstop. He was the guy who could, you know, cover up for everybody's mistakes. 5 Super Bowl wins where they were trailing or tied in the fourth quarter. But clearly, I think that Rams Super Bowl, I think that very last one, showed the Patriots that we can win a Super Bowl with the offense, you know, not playing at top form. We don't need 30 points out of an offense to win a Super Bowl. And maybe that provided a little bit of a template and a relief for them going forward, saying like, hey, we value him as a year-to-year quarterback, even if what he wants is a 2-year commitment with, you know, no trade and no qualifiers.
And then, Seth, one final question. Ultimately, what is your sense as to what's driving and motivating Brady in the move to Tampa? In other words, is it to win another ring? Is it to prove Belichick and the Patriots wrong? Or is it something else?
Well, And that's fascinating. I mean, nobody really knows what motivates these truly elite athletes. Like, I remember I once watched the Kobe Bryant documentary, and I asked Brady, you know, hey, does that reflect you? Because it was a real amazing insight into how great athletes prepare. And Brady was like, he's the Mamba. Like, it didn't really have anything to do with him. And so what's driving him? I don't know, but I think that it's the same thing that was driving him back when I met with him in November of 2001. I think that there's just an element of testing himself and self-actualization and what can he accomplish. I think that, you know, Jeff Darlington, my colleague who's been all over this, said it really well. He said, look, Brady's not necessarily looking to resume pad. And that was an amazing statement, because you just think, like, it's a race to a seventh ring. Tom Brady, if he's been about anything, it's been about winning each and every time out. And, you know, but maybe there's some truth to that. I mean, maybe he adjusts some expectations for these last couple of years, and he wants something just different out of football than what he's had for the previous 20. You know, we'll see. If the Bucs start 1-4, we'll see. I don't know. But that's what I think right now.
He is the excellent senior writer at ESPN and Outside the Lines. His latest piece is a tremendous read. The story behind the split of Tom Brady, Bill Belichick, and the Patriots. Seth, it had been a moment or two, but great to have you back on the show. Always good to get caught up with you, and that's a great piece. Thanks for sharing it.
Thanks, man.
Take care, Seth. Really good journal. Really, really good. That's a great read and a great piece. All right, so we were talking more about Brady, like what makes him go? Why'd he go to Tampa? Is that the best place for him? Could the Patriots have done more to keep him? Did they want to keep him? Patriot fans, you know, you've had some time to think about this. Maybe you've hit your local show. Would you come up here to the big stage? Come to the big show. What are your thoughts on this? Who do you blame? Or is there no blame? Did they do the right thing? 1-800-636-8686. I've got an open segment when we come back. Pete Thamel coming up the top of hour number two. You should get your thoughts together on your beef. What is your beef? It's a Tuesday. We will have that segment. Bucks linebacker Shaq Barrett in hour number three. And your phone calls, plus a lot more content still ahead. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show. Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
And if you're watching on CBS Sports Network, there is your XR4TI. There's Alvy, the old man in the back raising his hand. That's Ike. That's Hawk up front. We know you want to see college basketball this time of year, so tune into CBS and CBS Sports Network all week long for NCAA Tournament Rewind and relive some of the best moments from March Madness. Do it. 1-800-636-8686. I need you to take advantage of the open phone lines, right? It's a perfect match. You have time. I have open lines. You have time. The phone call is free. Let's do it. Hey, Hawk, why is your head buried in your hands? What are you up to now, dope? I don't know. I got a feeling it's got something to do with this. I'm looking at my call screen right now. Oh, and look who's on line number three. And incredibly enough, the call is coming from Japan. And this caller, quote, in Japan, told Hawk his name was Richard. What the hell, I'm game. What's the worst that could possibly happen? We go to Japan.
From the Olympic Committee out here in Japan, these matters are really, really hard, especially since they're so big. And a lot of people...
Anytime, Alvy.
I don't like that call. Not a very good call.
Rich, Rex, what's the difference? Hey, Rex, normally when people pretend to be somebody else, they change their voice so they sound like that other person. Not you, Rex. You told my call screener that you were Richard Pound, but then you sounded exactly like Rex. Good news is, Rex, I know you won't be calling during the What's Your Beef segment, because you've already called. Once again, you can grow the hell up if you want. And even if you don't, grow the hell up. Every single time that guy's in the news, and he is in the news pretty frequently, that type of thing happens. You want to talk about some arrested development? I've never seen so many 40-year-olds acting like 8-year-olds in my life as right here in this spot when Dick Pound gets quoted for anything. Hey, you're not helping him. You're hurting him, Alvin. And you can lose that Beavis and Butthead drop anytime you want. Let's get back to the show.
Give me back my stuff!
Show. Again.
Give me back my
show.
Give me back my
show.
Give me back my
talk show.
Give me back my
the jungle. All right, so the more things change, the more some things never change. Take Rex, for instance. And then take the New York Knicks. It's amazing to me, Hawk, how much fun you're having with this. How did you even get out of the third grade, Hawk? But you didn't. That's the thing. You're stuck right there. You're like the rest of them. All right, so the truth is, I could do something on the Knicks every single day on this program. Just about every single day, whether there are games or not, because the Knicks are that easy to clown. It's fishing in a barrel with dynamite. It is that easy. I could take whatever latest headline or blunder they've had, because they have one virtually every single day. I can riff on that for a few minutes, throw in some horrible music from JD and the Straight Shot, and I can call that a segment or an hour or a show. But like I said, it's so lazy. It'd be way too easy. So I have to hold off and restrict myself and discipline myself to only doing it when there's something that is especially notable or especially egregious. You know, like Stan Van Gundy. Like Stan Van Gundy being asked whether he would be interested in coaching the Knicks or not. Somebody did run that back to him and ask him, and he swatted that shot into the rafters. His reaction to the idea of being the head coach of the Knicks was like a Dwight Howard impression of SVG.
What are you guys doing? Dwight, you gotta catch the ball with two hands.
That was Dwight Howard way back in the day doing an impression of Stan Van Gundy. I'm guessing he would sound exactly like that if you said to him, "Hey, Stan, you got time? You're looking for an opportunity? Why don't you coach the Knicks?" Like, normally a head coach who's asked about the Knicks job would try and do something graceful and not answer the question. Maybe they say something about how the job's not open or it would be inappropriate to comment on that. Not SVG. Van Gundy told ESPN Radio, quote, "I'm not really interested in the New York Knicks. No. First of all, there's a family history there. If anyone would be interested in that, and I'm not sure he is either, it would be my brother."
Brother.
End quote. All right, so that makes a little bit of sense. You don't want to go where your brother had been the head coach. Maybe you leave an opening for him in the event that he wants it and you focus on other jobs. But what if that wasn't the case? Is there any other reason why you might not be interested in being the head coach of the New York Knicks? Well, as long as you're asking, yes. Van Gundy's like, yes. Now that you bring it up, there is another reason. Van Gundy said, quote, "And number two, I've said this. I'm different than a lot of coaches in looking at jobs. To me, it's all about who you work for and who you work with. Everything that I've seen over the last few years with that organization says that it is extremely dysfunctional." End quote. Bam!
Bam!
Have some. SVG giving JD a straight shot. Dunked on him. Dunked on his head. I haven't seen somebody dunk on the Knicks that disrespectfully since Scottie Pippen posterized Patrick Ewing and then stepped over him and stood over him. Most people would politely decline to answer the question, or they would just dance around it, or say it's not something that's really on their radar, or they would just stop after the first part of the answer when Stan said he was not interested in that job because of family history. But that's not Van Gundy. That's not Stan Van Gundy. He said that, and he wanted to make something really clear. that the Knicks are extremely dysfunctional. Not dysfunctional, not going through a rough patch, not in need of a culture change. No, they're extremely dysfunctional. Look, somebody calling the Knicks extremely dysfunctional is not exactly breaking news. I've done that for years. But a respected NBA head coach calling an NBA organization extremely dysfunctional is pretty significant. Like NBA head coaches, who, especially ones who are between things, NBA head coaches, and particularly those that are in between stints as a head coach, are notorious for never saying anything critical about teams and organizations because they do not want to burn any chance they might have at getting the next gig. You don't want to do that because somebody looking at you might think, damn, if he's going to light them up like that, what happens if we hire him and then something goes wrong? He'll do the same to us. This is why coaches in that position usually are not good color commentators or analysts because they're always holding back. They're thinking about the next paycheck while collecting the current paycheck. And the last thing you want to do is say or do anything that's going to eliminate you from consideration for that next gig. Except for Stan Van Gundy. He doesn't give a damn.
I don't have an answer for that.
Thanks, Siri.
Is there something else I can help with?
No. He doesn't have... He doesn't care about that. Wow. The robots are taking over. Van Gundy doesn't give a damn. At least he doesn't give a damn as it relates to the Knicks. He wants you to know how little he thinks of the Knicks and how dysfunctional they really are. And if saying that means that the Knicks are going to eliminate him as a coaching candidate, great. You're doing this guy a favor. You were never on his list anyway. And maybe if he says it out loud enough times, the team won't bother him with a telephone call. And if he's saying it, you know pretty much every other coach who matters is thinking it. How could they not? Have you seen the list of head coaches that they've run through at MSG in the last few decades? Some of the best minds in basketball took jobs there and could not find success there. That extremely dysfunctional organization has chewed up and spit out some of the more promising head coaches and even potential Hall of Famers and members of the Hall of Fame. It doesn't matter who you are or what your track record has been, the Knicks are kryptonite. Like Nicktonite. Hey-o! Phil Jackson, take a seat, old man.
Phil Jackson.
Larry Brown, not here. David Fizdale. Take that for data. Respected assistant. Not here, you aren't. Spike Lee. You can get a taste of artist function as well, Spike. How's that grab you? How's that taste, Spike? That PR wizard that the team hired, who then had a PR disaster in his first appearance. Yeah, you too, dude. Whatever worked in the past will no longer work when you get to Madison Square Garden. Every coach knows that. SVG is the only one with the guts to say it publicly and not to back down from it. There are only 30 head coaching opportunities, but in SVG's mind, there are really only 29 because there's no way he would ever take that job. And at this point, neither will anybody else who matters even a little because they are extremely dysfunctional. He just lit them up. 1-800-636-8686. I could do it every single day. But I have to show discipline and pick my spots, and only when it's especially egregious. That's an example of it being especially egregious.
I don't have an answer for that.
Thank you, Siri. She didn't, did she? That's all right, Siri. I wasn't talking to you anyway. How many of you do that?
Don't talk to me.
How many of you have the bleep Siri mode on? Are you afraid that Big Brother's watching, that they hear every single conversation?
Brother.
Most people I know are. Most people I know are. I'm not. Maybe I should be, but I should probably just turn it off so that stops happening.
I don't have an answer for that.
You never do. She never does.
You have a problem? Turn off your station.
Let's see. At Drew West LA tweets. Rex. 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 Yeah, of course. There's always one of those after that bonehead calls. See the next one. 1-for-3-C-1 tweets, Rex, 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 Rex. Like I said, there's always a couple of those dopes after that guy calls. Let's see this one. Aaron in Iowa. Hey, Rome. Richard. Rex, 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 Rex. All right. So if I have 1.4 million followers, three of them have said that. Jamie in Green Bay tweets, I can't believe Alvin just ran a prestigious member of the International Olympic Committee. See, that's the thing, Jamie. It wasn't really him. He ran Rex.
That's why it took so long to reach the right decision. And
anytime, Alvin. Anytime, Alvin. Exactly what were you waiting on, Alvin? Dear Jim, now that Brady is out of New England, I hold the current record for longest time spent in one place without moving. Signed, Alvin's perfectly coiffed hair. Brett from Bugaha. It is sharp.
Dude.
Alvin is having a really good lettuce day. All right, so we look ahead to hour number two. Pete Thamel is a Yahoo National College Football and Basketball reporter. He will be joining us when we come back. Shaq Barrett, top of hour number three. Also next hour, the What's Your Beef segment. I'm looking for beefs. 1-800-636-8686. You can also hit me up with a beef on Twitter at Jim Rome, or just email me your beef, Rome, R-O-M-E, at haveatake.com. Second hour starts with Pete Thamel, and that is next.